Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody. Cody, how are you on this fine Monday? Early evening it is.
Right? Yeah, it's not a victory Monday, so we can't be excited about it. Nope. I'm okay. I'm doing okay. I obviously a rough weekend for us Steelers fans. I don't know. I'm in a weird place, I guess, with this team. I don't know what more to say. James, how are you doing?
I'm doing good just because the rest of the AFC North lost.
That's fair. That's fair.
Had any of them won, it really would have soured this whole thing. I'm not happy about this. Honestly, it was a very easily winnable game. And we're going to talk about some of the things that could have gone differently very easily that had a big impact in this game. That's all coming. But first, before we get into that, we're going to talk a little bit of Steelers by the Lake news.
Yes, we are.
I want to give a special shout out to Josh Kennedy, new follower on YouTube. Good buddy of mine, getting active with the comments. We love to see it. Join Josh in the comments and we'll shout you out too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So talk about the comments. Be there or on Facebook or anywhere else. And don't forget those 5-star reviews. You automatically get a shout out. If you got a business that you want to have a shout out, I'll even do a little promo for you if you give me a 5-star review.
Yeah, I'll get my movie trailer voice on and be like, if you need your toilet scrubbed, we can do something. We'll do something for you for sure. But moving on to Steelers news now. Before the game, obviously, Steelers elevated outside linebacker Delonte Scott to the active roster. That was important because of the loss of TJ Watt, so that was something that we needed. And then the inactives for the game, nothing too crazy here, minus one that I think I'm still confused about. Mason Rudolph, Kendrick Green, Isaiah Loudermilk, Mark Robinson still being inactive, and then Steven Sims and the outside linebacker David Anini. And sure,
yeah, which David Anini makes sense to me. Just because obviously he had only been there for a couple of days,
so he
doesn't know the defense yet. So I would expect him to be active in this week's upcoming game against the Browns. You might still elevate Delonte Scott just for insurance. You never know. Or maybe it'll be one more week that he sits, and then the following week against the Jets. Maybe that's the week that he finally gets the helmet. And if it does, I'll be there in person, just saying. Just reach out to us on social media, anywhere, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. I would love to meet some of you guys, shake some hands, talk some football, take some selfies, whatever you want to do. So
have a beer.
I'm down. I'll be there.
Maybe just one.
Do some beer bongs, whatever. You know, like, we're going to make this happen. We're going to have a good time. We're going to party it up. We're going to celebrate the Steelers versus the Jets. Hopefully the Steelers will show up to play and play well in that game. But that's my thought process on it. You need Anini to be there for a little bit of time first. Mark Robinson, I feel like it's a numbers game. Until a couple of guys are actually significantly injured and cannot play, yep. I don't think Robinson's going to get a helmet.
Makes sense. It's sad, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we got to keep an eye on it because this week Devin Bush did get a foot injury. On a short week, if he doesn't get a full participation in practice before Thursday, which he did not today, it was a limited participation with that foot injury. And he didn't come back in the game once he came out with that injury either. It was just Spillane and Miles Jack the rest of the way. So if that happens, if he's not able to go, he could be inactive. Robinson could get his first helmet against the Browns.
Yeah. And with that being said, we are going to put out more than likely another episode on Wednesday night, previewing the game Thursday night, since it is a short week. And then we will be posting a game review on, I don't know, Friday or Saturday, one of those days, maybe.
We'll make it happen one way or the other.
We'll figure it out. We'll make sure that there's before Sunday, more than likely. I don't want to wait until Sunday, but we'll get something out there for you guys for sure. So let's go ahead and, James, let's throw ourselves right at this stupid football game. Pittsburgh Steelers at home, the home opener against the New England Patriots, Mac Jones and Bill Belichick coming to town against Mitch Trubisky and Mike Tomlin. And I don't know, from the get-go, it didn't feel great. It didn't feel bad right away, but I don't know. I felt like we couldn't stop their offense from third down conversion after third down conversion. I don't know. It started early in this game of me getting worried about these third downs.
Yeah, I feel like there was really only one drive that Pittsburgh looked good, and that was when they went with a hurry-up offense. Went right down the field on that and scored a touchdown on that drive. So, obviously we need more of that and less of this lethargic, barely being able to convert, not sustaining drives, not enough third down conversions, throwing short of the sticks way too often on third down. For some reason, when it's third and long, Mitch Trubisky's favorite target is whoever is closest to the line of scrimmage, which is typically Najee, which is completely unfair to Najee because then he's got to try to break seven tackles to get a first down. So I really feel like it went south for Mitch early in the game. And when you look at his numbers, it's not awful other than the yardage. But he's got to get that ball down the field. And early in the game, he throws the ball over the middle. It gets tipped by Mac Wilson and then intercepted. And I feel like he got gun shy from that throw.
Yeah.
And really didn't go back to the middle of the field much the rest of the game because of it. And you can't do that. It's too large of an area of the football field. If you're only throwing to the sidelines and only short passes, then they don't even need to worry about defending the middle of the field because they know you're not throwing it there. And then you don't have any yards after catch because they know where the ball's going.
Yeah, I'm going to make a point here real quick. We had three and outs the whole game. One was the first drive. The second drive we had was an interception. And then the last two drives we had were also three and outs. You can't have that late game. You can't have that early game.
And to clarify, these are two of the most crucial times to actually get a drive together.
Absolutely. In the middle of the game, I would rather see a three and out in the middle of the game just because something went awry or a play didn't work or this or that. But when you look at it, your first drive was three plays for 6 yards, took a minute 33 off the clock, and you punted it away. Your second drive was nine plays for 33 yards, 5 minutes off the clock, but you throw an interception. And then we had a field goal, a six-play drive that ended in a punt, and then we had four plays that ended the half. We didn't get into field goal range or anything like that. Then our first drive of the third quarter, because they got the ball first, was seven plays and a field goal. And then we finally got in the end zone early in the fourth. And then we only touched the ball two more times after that, and it was three and outs. You can't do that.
No.
Especially against the team that's coached by Bill Belichick, he's going to take advantage of every opportunity you give him. And they didn't need many opportunities against us, unfortunately, because they other than the interception, they scored on all of their drives except for, I believe, so they had three as well, not including the last drive because that was just the end of the game. But they had three times they punted the ball, and two of those were three and outs. So our defense showed up, our offense didn't, which is typically what happens recently with what we've been talking about.
Yeah, and we can't blame this one on the defense, right? When they only give up 17 points in the entire game, you got to be able to manage more than 14, right? Like, if you score 14 points on offense and that's it, you're probably not going to win the game very often. It's rare that you're going to hold somebody to less than 14. And the defense really, truly didn't even give up that whole 17 because part of that is on Gunnar Olszewski for muffing that fumble or that punt return, right? The thing goes off his face mask for crying out loud. He judged it so poorly. So that's just when you give the ball to the other team that close to the end zone, you're putting your defense way behind, and you can't do that. So I feel like overall the defense didn't have an awful game on this, just didn't take advantage of opportunities. Cam Sutton had an interception go right through his hands, which I'm sure he's beating himself up about. But this is the second one of the season now where he could have had an interception and dropped the ball.
Yeah.
And then that touchdown pass given up by Akilah Witherspoon, he's in perfect position. But he tries to let the ball come to him instead of reaching out and getting his hands up above his head. If he puts even one hand above his head, it's an incomplete pass. If he puts two above his head, it's probably intercepted. Instead, he leaves them both down to try to let the ball drop to him, and the receiver goes over his back and catches it.
Yep. Out of 14 games played this weekend, Pittsburgh, with a score of 14, would have only won five of them. So put that in perspective. Got it. Yeah. In this league nowadays, you got to be able to put up more than 14 points.
Yep.
With that being said, I felt that Mitch Trubisky I agree with you. We talked about this a little bit before the show. I agree that he got gun shy, but I also think that the play calling has consistently been an issue. If you have three guys, including Mitch Trubisky himself, after the game coming out and making comments about the play calling, I think that all the players are in unison that they understand that even when there are other options for him to go to, they're not consistent enough and not putting the receivers in a good position to make plays down the field. Deontay Johnson said something, Chase Claypool said something, and Mitch Trubisky all were quoted after the game speaking out against the play calling in a nice way. I'll put it that way. You know, they're not going to go out and say, hey, our offensive coordinator's crap right now, but they were saying, you know, we got to, I think I'll have to find it again and share it on our social media. I found the one, the guy said, I think it was Deontay's, or maybe it was somebody else. I'll have to look it up. But one of them said it, all we can do is go out and perform what the plays are called to the best of our abilities. You know, that's all we can do. That might've been Mitch.
Yep.
And they're right. But at the same time, I do agree that Mitch probably got gun shy. I believe that this would play a factor in it. If Mitch is concerned about losing his starting job before he has a chance to prove himself and he doesn't feel like he's getting adequate play calling, I'd probably be gun shy too. I don't think Mitch is naturally gun shy. I think Mitch is a fairly good gunslinger. I mean, I remember seeing him in throw bombs to Darnell Mooney and I believe what Cole Kmet he had in Chicago there for a while. He was always throwing the ball downfield, but I think he just doesn't have as many opportunities to do so now, at least in not ways that they're comfortable with. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But again, Mitch, 21 of 33 attempts, 168 yards, one touchdown, one interception. You'd like to see that touchdown to interception ratio be a little bit better, but it is what it is moving forward with this game.
Yeah. And to me with this, I think to me, it's a little bit more decision-making on Mitch than it is play calling. Because when you look at his 21 completions, six of them went to the running backs, right? Five to Najee Harris, one to Jalen Warren.
Yep.
Not a single one of those was a running back screen, which means the running back was just an option on the pattern. And a running back is never a primary option on any passing play unless it's a running back screen. That's the only time they're the primary option. In fact, they're typically the very last option otherwise. So why in the world is such a high percentage, dang near one third of his passes, going to the very last option, the check down option, when he's going through? Is he really actually going through the progressions? Is he actually looking at all the receivers? I would say from watching the games, he's not, because you're seeing George Pickens just standing there with nobody around him going like this. Hey, 14, I'm not a quarterback. I know it says 14, but I'm actually a receiver. You can throw it to me. He throws it to George Pickens once on the sideline. He make a beautiful catch for, what was it, 23, 24 yards.
23
gives him
yards.
A chance to try to move down the field. And then follows it up the next play, throwing the same exact ball, really, but to Deontay Johnson, and he's way too short to make the catch. It just kind of proves that kind of pass needs to be to a guy like Pickens. It needs to be to a guy like Chase Claypool. And we need to use these guys. I mean, there's such a mismatch with Chase Claypool and George Pickens versus any slot receiver in the world, and throw them over the middle of the field, and we're not doing it at all.
Let's be safe.
And it's not because they're not lining up that way either. Yeah. It's not because they're not lining up, and it's not because they're not running routes that way. It's because we're not throwing it to them.
Let's be safe here and assume, however, out of those six, probably at least two, if not three of those plays that were thrown to running backs were probably because of the lack of blocking and the lack of time he actually had to go through his reads. I would argue two or three of those might have been that.
I didn't see that personally. It's like he looks at his first option, Deontay Johnson, and then he goes straight to the running back. And there's never any going through it. And to me, at least this week, I liked that he did a little bit better job of hitting Claypool more than a yard or two down the field. So this time Chase averaged like 5 yards a catch instead of 2 yards a catch, right?
Six and a half.
Right. So that's better. This is better. It's further, because he only averaged like 2.5 in the first game, right?
Yep.
I think it was like 4 catches for 14 yards or something ridiculously pitiful like that. So it's a step in the right direction, but it's got to keep on going. There's no reason that the Steelers team is the only one that doesn't have a receiver catching 10 yards plus per catch.
True.
True. The guys are they're downfield. They are. It's just he's constantly choosing whoever is the shortest option.
True. So we've obviously talked about the wide receivers. Deontay Johnson, 6 receptions for 57 yards, an average of 9.5. Deontay played well. Deontay had a couple times where, like the one you talked about, if that was a taller receiver thrown, you know, that catches something else. Deontay did get, I think, two good catches for first downs on one of the drives that I think we got a field goal out of, maybe the touchdown drive. I'm not the 2-point conversion was a phenomenal
conversion.
Yeah, the 2-point conversion was a phenomenal pass and a phenomenal catch. Yep, 100%. Yeah. Najee Harris was the second leading receiver, which is always bad.
Which is a big problem.
Yeah, 5 receptions for 40 yards, averaged 8 per reception. Not bad if you have your other guys getting more involved. You know, if Mitch throws for 350 yards and that stat line's for Najee, I'm okay with that. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Chase Claypool, 4 for 26, 6.5 average. The fact that we had 4 guys, including George Pickens, on the one reception for 23 yards, so maybe you don't count that. I don't know. 4 guys that averaged over 10 yards, or excuse me, not average, but long, had a 10-yard reception or longer. 4 guys this week, so that's a plus. That's going in the right direction. Kind of. It's better than last week.
Well, the problem is last week we had a 31-yard catch by Gentry and a 32-yard catch by Freiermuth. And this week the longest one is 23 yards and is on a drive that didn't matter.
That's fair. Okay. You caught me in that one. That's fine. I still like the fact that our longers are moving up because, I mean, they're not. They're not from last week.
There has to be more and more of those. I agree 100%. We need to have a higher number of these 10-plus yard catches. And I did like that Mitch hit a few of these, like, 10 to 12-yard outs this week.
Yep.
That was also an improvement over last week.
Yeah, and then you obviously have Pat Freiermuth, 4 receptions for 22 yards, including that one touchdown. So that was phenomenal. I needed that for my fantasy team, not going to lie. And then Jaylen Warren had the one reception for 0 yards, which actually I think was negative yards, but they somehow didn't give him negative yards. Because that was on 3rd and 8 when it should have been thrown downfield, and we threw it to Jaylen at or behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, threw it to Jaylen Warren behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 8. And we wonder why we're not scoring points. You know, that can't be your primary. The one thing that I was most frustrated from in this game, I would say there was a complete lack of even thinking about using Zach Gentry. And I'm not saying that I think Zach Gentry is some amazing weapon, but the dude's catch radius is enormous, and he always goes forward when he catches it. So in a game where you're struggling to use the middle of the field, and you've got a 6'8" tight end that's built well and gets yards after contact, why aren't we using him at all?
Yep, I can agree with that. Gentry has been proving himself more and more to be a valuable target in the passing game, so I agree with that. And it's not like he didn't play. I saw him in there multiple times.
Yeah, they just used him as a blocker most of the time, an extra pass blocker.
Yeah. The running game, again, didn't go much of anywhere. The longest run of the game was 18 yards on an end-around to Gunnar Olszewski, and then the second one behind that was an 8-yard run by Najee, and then you had a 7-yard run by Mitch Trubisky. You got to have more. I mean, Najee's on 15 carries only averaged 3.3 yards a carry. Jaylen Warren on 4 carries averaged 3.8, and Derek Watt had 1 that was 2 yards. Now, granted, that was for a first down. That was great. But
sure was.
But you got to have more than that. You know, when you look across on the other side, Damien Harrison, Stevenson, both averaged over 4.7 yards per carry. Not one of our guys did, minus the 2 guys that had 1 rush each. Being the quarterback and gunner, you got to have more. And we talked about this before the show. James and I both believe the running was actually better this week. It still just wasn't good.
The worst part about this is that the running was drastically better than week 1, and it still wasn't up to par. Now, if it continues in this direction, it's going to be up to par. So I feel like they're figuring some things out. They're getting some creases. They're getting a few better runs than what they've been getting. I like the usage of Gunnar Olszewski on that end around. He's a very, very quick and shifty dude. He's the guy that's going to be most successful on those end arounds and reverses. He's the one that should be getting those 2-3 times a game, not Chase Claypool. Chase is a strong dude, but he isn't the kind of dude that's going to make a bunch of people miss. Gunner, on the other hand, is a very agile dude and very adept at making people miss. So I want to see more of those reverses to Gunner.
Yeah, I agree. Even fake, you know, fake it every once in a while. They're going to have to sooner or later.
Yes, and that if you do that fake to Gunner, now the linebackers have to stay back. They can't just attack the line when you give it to Najee or whoever happens to be in there on the play. And that buys him one or two more steps to try to get a little bit more of a run.
Yeah, 100%.
And honestly, I think we really need to give props to Derek Watt. He finally gets a chance to run the ball, and it's a third and one situation, and he gets you two. I don't care that it's just two. We needed one. He gave me two. That's twice as much as what we needed. It's a first down. It's moving the chains. Stop complaining about Derek Watt being a waste of money.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and go to the defensive side of them. Well, you want to talk offensive line? I don't even know.
I don't think the offensive line was as bad as what people think it was. Honestly, Mitch just hung onto the ball too long a few times. He had a few times where he could have easily thrown it away. One time he's going to the sideline and chose to, for some weird reason, start running backwards when he could have actually easily gotten past the line of scrimmage and gotten down finish.
I think it was that was first. That was first and 10, wasn't it?
I don't remember the down and distance, to be honest with you. But to me, it was an easy decision. Start running down the field. He's an athletic dude. He's trying to make a guy miss and starting to go backwards. He should have just gone downfield and got some yards.
Yeah. Offensive line. I don't believe it was as bad as week one. Mitchell Trubisky, I agree, held onto the ball too long, but I can't see his point of view all the time. And I do wonder with both of the top two wide receivers making complaints about the play calling, I genuinely wonder if the wide receivers feel that they're not calling plays to scheme them open. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to come up with a play that just says, hey, you do this, hey, you do this, hey, you do this, and think of them individually. You have to come up with a play style, and teams do this all the time. There are rub routes. There's, you know, there's all these different things. We're going to send everyone to the left and get a one-on-one. Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're not doing that, and that's why the wide receivers are getting frustrated. So I'm curious how there's got to be a handful, maybe not a lot, maybe not even 50%, but a handful of those plays where Mitch held onto the ball too long or did a check down when there was just nobody else there because they weren't schemed to be open. So that is
definitely possible.
Yeah. That's something that I'm going to try to look forward to more, especially in this week's game against the Browns. I will try to see if I can't figure this out. Not that there's a way for me to look downfield. But hopefully that's something that we can kind of take into consideration when we talk about him and everything going on. With that being said, I think it's time to move to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's some positives and some negatives on this defensive game. Again, you have to look at Minka Fitzpatrick and say, here's a guy that came to play, right? Minka gets himself an interception again. So he's got one in each of the first two games. Off to an incredible start for him. And Minka did his part in this game. You never saw him missing tackles. He's getting that turnover early in the game to keep Pittsburgh in the game. So hats off to Minka. He had a pass deflection and an interception and really putting together a nice season for himself. We just have to have somebody else making some splash plays. It can't be just Minka.
Oh, 100%.
And I love that he's doing it. But like Cam Sutton's got to complete that interception.
Yep.
Khalil Witherspoon's got to bat that pass
down. At least bat that ball down.
Yeah, at least bat it down. And somebody's got to force a turnover that's not named Minka Fitzpatrick, right?
And somebody's got to get
the quarterback. Yeah.
Zero sacks this week.
Alex Highsmith was around the quarterback all game long. I really thought that Alex had a pretty good game. He was just that close to getting a sack so many times in this game. And that's the difference between him and a guy like TJ Watt, because TJ Watt probably gets him to the ground a few of those times. But I did like that they were moving Alex Highsmith around on both sides to try to get him some matchup advantages. And I feel like he did have himself a good game. Three solo tackles. Unfortunately, like we said, no sacks. Cam, I thought, represented himself well again, you know, with three tackles total and one pass deflection. Just was unable to get to the quarterback also. And I think to me, a lot of that was just because the center was helping the left guard a lot of the game.
Well, and they
didn't really get a chance to get his one-on-one.
Yeah, and they used their running backs. They understood that Pittsburgh has a pass rush. There were multiple times where a tight end would stay in and block or a running back would stay in and block. Multiple times. So, again, this was just the offensive coordinator for – you know, and the play calling and the whole idea of the prep for this game, they said, hey, we're not going to let you guys get to our quarterback. And they did a good job of that. So I hate to say it, but props to the Patriots for that, because that was very well done. Miles Jack led the team with tackles this week with 13 total tackles. Unfortunately, you know, he was the only one above multiple digits, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But you had Minka Fitzpatrick with 6, Robert Spillane with 6. We obviously saw Devin Bush go out with that injury. So he only had 4 on the day. Malik Reed had 4. He got involved. I don't know. I just felt like nobody, like you said, Minka had the one turnover, but nobody else did anything spectacular on defense. Nobody. I can't think of any. Okay, I lied. And I'm going to hate saying this because I'm not a fan of Terrell Edmonds, but Terrell Edmonds did have a very good breakup at one play where him and Robert Spillane crashed on a third down conversion attempt and prevented the tight end from catching the ball. It was a great play by Terrell Edmonds, probably one of the top 3 I've seen him play in his career, and it was just a pass defense. So I don't know. I don't have much to say about this defense because there was almost nothing done, and there wasn't a whole lot of, like, the mistake. We talked about the mistake with Akilah Witherspoon to allow that one touchdown. We can talk about Larry Ogunjobi if you want to talk about him getting completely destroyed most of the game, and especially on that one touchdown run.
Yeah, Larry was basically a non-factor again. He had 3 assists in this game, and that's it. Really, when you're paying a guy as much money as they did, what was it, like $7.5 million, something like that, you really expect this to be an impact player, and he has not been yet in the first 2 games. In the goal line touchdown run that was given up, Larry just gets absolutely blown off the ball.
$6.2 million.
Most of the defenders, $6.2 million.
$6.2 million.
Yeah, it's a lot of money for a guy that's just getting a couple assists here and there. So to me, I'm really disappointed so far in Larry Ogunjobi. He's got the opportunity here. He's getting a lot of one-on-ones, and he's not making the most of it at all. I know that I had a big high opinion of Michael Onwenu when he came out, and Michael Onwenu, to his defense, shut down Larry Ogunjobi. He didn't really let him do a dang thing this whole game. In that goal line, Ogunjobi gets blown up, and so does Devin Bush. I don't know if that's where he hurt his foot or not, but you know what? You don't expect Devin Bush to hold up one-on-one against an interior offensive lineman anyway. So that defensive lineman in front of him absolutely has to, and he didn't. I also was kind of disappointed on that last drive when the Patriots were basically sealing the game. And ended up sealing the game because Pittsburgh couldn't stop the run. I wasn't as much disappointed in the players as I was the coaching staff. Because what we saw last week that was extremely effective against Cincinnati, when they came out with 3 wide receivers, and it seemed like they were going to be running the ball. It was likely a running situation. Pittsburgh switched to a 3-3-5, which means they had 3 defensive linemen in their nickel defense instead of the normal 2 defensive linemen. 1 outside linebacker, 2 middle linebackers. It's a more stout defensive front. Pittsburgh didn't switch to the 3-3-5 until New England was all the way down to like the 20-yard line. It was too late.
Yep.
It was too late. By the time they did it, it did work, and it was too late because they already had burned up most of the clock, and Pittsburgh didn't have enough timeouts left to stop the game. It just took too long. Too long with just 2 defensive linemen trying to stop 5 offensive linemen. And you didn't have the benefit of somebody like TJ Watt, who can stand up in those situations almost like a guy a lot heavier than he is.
Yep.
So I was disappointed in that the defensive coordinator there did not make that adjustment early enough in that drive to give the defense a chance to hold up against that run. It was pretty obvious that's what they were going to do.
Yeah. Why would they do anything different?
They waited until they went all the way down inside like the 30-yard line before they switched it up. And then it's just, like I said, too late at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Special teams wise, I don't know. Do you have anything more for defense? Because I don't.
No, I don't think really anybody else stood out on
defense. DeMarvin Leal did have a pass breakup. That was important.
That was excellent. I'm glad you brought that up. That was excellent. That was great IQ on his part. Yeah. Dude moves quick for a guy as big as he is.
I will say that. He does. Boswell did his job 2 for 2 on field goals. He didn't have any extra point attempts because we went for 2 and got it. Gunnar Olszewski, the 1 punt return that he muffed and unfortunately was a turnover. That sucks for him, especially being the
the game against his former team, you know, and he even said before the, he even said before the game, you know, anytime you go up against the X, you want to show off. And he did not at all. I mean, he had an 18-yard run. That was about the best thing. It was an angry run.
Yeah, the end around was excellent, but as excellent as the end around was, the punt return was drastically worse. That fumble was very costly.
Yep. And then Presley Harvin, four punts. One was a touchback. 69 was his long, and that was a booming punt.
Yeah, it was.
51.8 average on his punt. So that's that was good. When you look at the difference between their guy having 41.5, again, we need to think, and a shout out to my friend Nick Van Noord right now. James and I need to think of a way to kind of rate these punters in a different light, because sometimes punting the ball, the average doesn't do it justice, because if they were punting from closer to our side of the field, 41 might be a good average. If we were punting from, you know, so we'll try to think about this and look into that a little bit. But again, the fact that Presley Harvin had, I mean, you like those long punts, especially when our offense wasn't moving all day long. So 51.8 average was good.
Yeah, Presley has been doing better and better, I think, this season. So it's nice to see, because he was a little erratic last year. He had a lot of them go off the side of his leg that would only go 35, 40 yards.
Yep.
So far this year, he really has been booming them. So I'm pretty impressed with it. And the coverage of the Gunners is pretty solid, man. I did feel like Miles Boykin and James Pierre did a great job of getting down there and not allowing much for returns.
Yeah, Miles Boykin had the one nice good job. One good one. I mean, I see the receiver or the return man didn't even get a yard, I don't think. So that was great job.
No, he hit him like right away, right after he caught it. So
yeah, great job on that.
Excellent job there. But yeah, those guys are showing up. Connor Hayward too. We almost got a safety on that one play because Connor Hayward getting that. So
we did. We should have just got a touchdown on that one. That was sad. That was frustrating. But real quick before we go ahead and end the show, reminder that James will be at the Jets game. So hit us up on social media. Try to link up with him if you're gonna go. James will be tailgating, having a blast per usual. Wednesday, we will more than likely be coming out with the next episode to preview the Browns game on Thursday night. And then also looking at the rankings right now, Pittsburgh leads the division right now at 1-1 because we beat the Cincinnati Bengals. So we're 1-0 in the division. Baltimore's 1-1. Cleveland is 1-1. And Cincinnati Bengals are 0-2 after facing a defeat to the Dallas Cowboys this past weekend. So
I don't know if you caught any of that game. They gave up 6 sacks in that game.
He's so 13. He's 13 on the week two. It's horrible.
Late in that game, there's some footage of Joe Burrow yelling to the sideline, "No empty set." And then on the next play, apparently they had Joe Mixon in as a blocker. He stayed in as a personal protector on the play.
It's not that hard.
These guys cannot block.
It is not that hard to figure that out. And the fact that your quarterback has to tell you that is really bad.
He's running for his life out there. Poor Joe Burrow. He's going to get hurt again.
Yeah. And I want to talk AFC as a whole real quick. Actually, I'm just going to talk AFC South. I don't really care about other things right now, just too much, but I just think this is funny.
Not the North?
No, AFC South, just for a quick second.
Okay.
Because I think it's funny. When you think about the AFC South, think about the teams. How would you imagine them ratings, like rankings? Don't look at them on any paper or anything, but when you think of the teams, who do you think should be first in the division? Like talent-wise. Colts?
The Colts.
Okay. I would probably still think Tennessee, just because of, you know, Derrick Henry, and, you know, they still have Ryan Tannehill. Right. That's a better quarterback than Matt Ryan, in my opinion, right now. Matt Ryan's a little bit past his prime.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
So Tennessee's dead last. Who do you think would be second? You probably would think Tennessee. I would probably think the Colts.
Yeah, I would have put Tennessee after the Colts then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Indianapolis is 3 right now. Who do you think would be the third best team in the division?
God. I mean, I don't have a very high opinion of Jacksonville or Houston.
I don't either. But Houston's second in the division right now, and Jacksonville is leading their division at 1-1. That is ridiculous.
That's pretty awful.
I just like when that stuff happens, because I know I'm 90% sure that it's not going to end this way in this order. I think that things are going to change, and, you know, in Indianapolis or Tennessee will probably win that division. But I did just find it really, really funny. So again, not to go off on a tangent on another AFC team or AFC division right now, but I just thought that was funny. So it's early in the year, guys. Anything can happen. Thankfully, we're still number one in our division for now. Knock on wood. I got it right here. but we are excited for what's to come and excited to have another division game already. Week three and two division games are going to be in the books. So playing the Browns this week, we hope it is a good one, and we hope we come out with a dub. Let's talk. No, we're not going to talk about that yet. We're going to talk about that on Wednesday. Three keys to success against the Browns. It feels like we should be talking about already.
It's because the game's only a couple days away.
What the heck? But again, thank you guys so much for listening and following. Be sure to follow and like on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribe and ring the bell. It's free. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off. Peace.